And Chandi, she who tears apart all the duality. She tears apart all the thoughts and all the obstacles and everything that keeps us from becoming one with God, one with the Divine Mother. And this Pak is the recitation of the stories of Chandi, she who tears apart thought, she who tears apart duality, and she's a goddess. And she's a goddess who is herself formless and comes in every form. So she has three particular forms, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, and Mahasarasvati. Sarvasadhya Mahalakshmi, Triguna Parameshwari, first and foremost is Mahalakshmi. She is pure being, Lakshya, the goal. And she divides herself into three and becomes Mahakali and Mahasarasvati, and thereby manifests the three Sattva, Rajan, Tamaguna, Srishti, Sthiti, and Lai, creation, preservation, transformation, all the threes. And that's how Chandi comes into our lives and starts to tear apart the duality. And I think we should begin with the introduction. We're on page 3, Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Every form in the universe is subject to evolution and devolution and the two intermediate positions, birth and death, the wheel of life. The waves of the sea rise and fall, vegetation rises from the earth and returns to it, animals born to existence ultimately decompose and mingle with the dust of the earth. Even the sun sets at the close of every day. Seeing this, and knowing fully well that every human being dies, even still our minds wander in the attachments of the ego as though we are immortal. What is this delusion of ego, this ignorance of attachment that binds our every thought and action? What are these dreams and illusions to which we are so bound? We adorn our bodies as though they are never subject to decay and cling to relationships with people and things as though they are the substance of our very existence. We eat when we are not hungry, kill when we don't need food, and copulate out of season. We intoxicate ourselves to forgetfulness, take tobacco and drugs even when we know it is injurious to our health, drive our cars as though there are no statistics of traffic fatalities. We see a new desire take birth with every perception and helplessly watch it grow until it becomes an obsession regulating our every action. As one possessed, we see morality and convention, even common sense, yield to the ethics of convenience in which we can rationalize any behavior that brings success. Look at the reality of our lives, at our goals and aspirations. There are many among us who have no vision of the future. We are caught in the paradox of working to survive and surviving to work. And somehow a sense of boredom, frustration, and futility has taken over our entire being. We find no lasting satisfaction, no sustaining pleasure, no all-inclusive delight. Again, when we find ourselves avidly pursuing some goal, we are constantly in strife. Our minds are harnessed to the thought without our control. A continual anxiety prevails in which the vision of success or failure recurs to us day and night. Look at these thoughts. How many of them bear significance in the cosmic reality? How many of them are such transient and petty desires that we ourselves can't remember them even after a few hours or a few days, let alone in the context of the history of civilizations or the evolution of humankind or the origin of the universe? What delusion has possessed us? And how do we go about purifying the ego so as to get rid of this bondage, so we can maintain our divine perception as gods and goddesses in the Garden of Bliss? In the Durga Saptashati, Mother shows us how to do just that. Give them all to her. The continual recitation of this book is designed to accomplish this. Every character mentioned in this book is within us. The forces that impel us to realize our own divinity, filling our lives with love and joy and a sense of meaningful purpose, as well as the forces that incline to diminish that perception. In the case of the enemies of the gods, asuras, which has been rendered as thoughts, primarily the root meanings of the words have been employed. Asuras, in Vedic usage, is an epithet of both the gods and their enemies alike. Just as the gods or devas are the forces of clear perception, their opponents must be those that obscure clear perception, self-centered, egotistical thoughts. In the case of the devas, the Vedic tradition has been applied almost exclusively, with the exception of the creative, maintaining, and dissolving capacities of consciousness, which are the Puranic conceptions of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. The symbolism of the weapons of war has been defined from a consensus of oral traditions combined with the available scriptural references in the tantras. It is the qualities and characteristics of spiritual discipline symbolized in these words that is relevant, more so than the question of with what physical weapon did she strike. Hence, these words will take significance in the individual meditations of the seeker, and their definitions will change with growth, development, and progress along the path. This principle is even more true of the goddess, the mother of the universe. In one sense, she resides in the image, the photo, or idol of worship. In another application, she is manifested in the physical body of the worshiper. And again, her feet cover the earth and her crown extends to the farthest reaches of the atmosphere. On every level, the scripture is a commentary on the evolution of consciousness. The Durga Saptashati or Chandipath is Puranic, comprising 13 chapters of Markandeya Purana, numbers 81 to 93. It dates between 900 and 500 BC. However, because the first writing in India was not widely used until the 3rd century BC, it is precarious to proclaim any accuracy as to the actual date. It is most probably assumed its present form during the 4th century AD under the patronage of the Gupta kings, when scholars collected, edited, and recorded the oral traditions of prose and poetry prevalent among the many peoples of the empire. Certainly, its root is Vedic. The entire Chandipath purports to be a commentary on the two Rig Vedic hymns included at the beginning and the end. The Ratri Shukta, praise of the night of duality, and the Devi Shukta, praise of the goddess who is unity. We must dispel the darkness of egotism in order to realize that I am a divine being of infinite perception. Chandipath is a fundamental authoritative text of the tantras. It gives definition to method and practice of the oral tradition that can only be learned from a qualified guru, the practice of which, when mastered, opens up the doors to the secret and makes available all the magic of the tantras, a new way of perceiving ourselves and the world around us. This is an intellectual interpretation of the Chandi. But to realize the real Chandi, we must strive to make the goddess the sum and substance of our entire life. This may be accomplished by sitting in an asan and pronouncing the mantras of this work, and by striving to make the asan and the recitation longer. Do not worry about not understanding. Do not worry about pronouncing the Sanskrit perfectly when you first begin your practice. Do not worry about anything. If you study this and other translations or commentaries and devotedly recite, Chandi will become known to you. The one who understands it completely is Lord Shiva, and to the extent we are capable, we become him. Thus, the Durga Saptashati is a practical training manual. As human beings, we have become habituated to being beset with thought. Through the study and practice of this work, according to the prescribed procedure, we seek to free ourselves from this habit, to take the ego eye out of thought, to find the remedy of that all too chronic disease, attachment, and to expand our awareness beyond the relationships of this physical body so as to intuit by direct perception the bliss of the universe. Saptashati is a way. Daily reciting the verses, we offer to Mother all our troubles, afflictions, all manner of thoughts and perturbations, even the very ego itself, and one by one she cuts them down, purifies them with the vibrations of her mantras until we too become the one of intuitive vision who only desires the highest wisdom that removes the attachments of the ego. In translating this work, I hope to put forth an effort that will please my parents, my gurus, the rishis, the gods, and the mother of the universe, and upon its completion, to become Lord Shiva. Satyananda Saraswati, Rishikesh, 1981. That's about 9 years after I had actually done the translation. That was a preparation for the first edition. This is the introduction to the 6th edition. It is more than 27 years since I worked on the original translation of the Chandipat. So much has changed in the world since I roamed the forests of India asking all the holy people I met how they could explain these verses. Over these many years, Hinduism has become a global culture. The word yoga has been assimilated into every modern language, and people are reciting the Chandipat all across Europe, throughout North and South America, in the Far East, the Middle East, Australia and New Zealand, Japan and Malaysia, certainly throughout India, and wherever students of Oriental culture and Hindu philosophy congregate. There were a few areas which needed to be updated from the original translation. Many students complained that I often wrote in Indian English, which is no doubt a dialect significantly different from Americanese. Having lived in India so long, it was impossible to remember what proper American English syntax was supposed to sound like. Therefore, this new edition has tried to edit out many of those uncomfortable usages. Also, the scripture has always been just as applicable to women as to men. However, the grammar followed the cultural traditions that suggest the men performed tapasya and the women provided support, nourishment, and enabled the discipline. Whether or not this may have been true in ancient times, it is no longer applicable to the present circumstances. Both males and females have an equal right and authority to pray to God. And this has been rectified in the current translation, which now remains neutral in matters of gender, except for the obvious references to the gods and goddesses. Punctuation has been applied in a much more liberal dosage, and it is a delight to discover people who get paid by the comma. We hope that the additional ink on the paper will make this edition much more readable and discernible. Although it is still a translation of a work which precedes Christianity by at least 1,000 years or more. But most important is the goddess, the divine mother, who has remained with me all these years. Her presence in my life is increasingly more vibrant and more tangible. The famous proverb reminds us that love is such a commodity. The more you give it away, the more it will grow. I always remember that samadhi, pure intuitive vision as he is called in the story, asks for the boon of eternal devotion to the Divine Mother, along with the wisdom which removes the attachment of egotism and possession. After she granted him that boon, he constantly traveled the world and set up altars to the Divine Mother and taught people the joy of submerging ourselves into the worship of divinity. These last so many years, we have been doing something similar by circumambulating the globe and translating the method of worship into many languages. It is our absolute delight that because of these efforts, the Chandipat is being recited by many people in many lands, and the pujas are being performed with sincerity, regularity, and a degree of efficiency which will make every devotee proud. After all, that is the meaning of a sadhu. I want to thank Nanda, whose knowledge of English is exemplary, and Vitalananda, whose knowledge of computers is exact, and Shrima, and the entire Devi Mandir family who have worked so hard to point me in the right direction and to offer support. I only pray that all of these efforts bring about a better world filled with devotees who respect each other because of their love for God. And that's Devi Mandir in 2001. Om Sang Saraswati Nama. Jayman, let's take a look at the table of contents. We're going to study this table of contents a little more thoroughly when we get to the Brahma Dishapi Vimochanam a little later in the text. The Vedas had four parts to them. There was Samhita, which were the hymns. There was Oranyak, which were the stories of the rishis in the forest. There was Brahmana, which were the texts that defined the systems of worship. How do you perform a yajna? How do you perform a puja? The books on puja padoti, the systems of worship. And the fourth was called Upanishad, or Vedanta, the philosophy. These were four separate types of literature that attached to each of the four Vedas. That made 16 books. Now, what happened in the Puranas was just like what we're doing, is taking the classical tradition and updating it in the vernacular of our modern society to the best of our ability. They did the same thing. And instead of having one book filled with hymns and one book filled with stories, they told a story about a king who went into the forest and met a rishi. And the rishi was busy performing some type of yajna or puja. And he described the puja that he was performing and told the story of why he was performing it, and then expressed the philosophy, and they united, they synthesized. It became the first expositions of Tantra. Tantra means to weave, the warp and the woof of the cloth. So they wove together, they synthesized all this knowledge into one story. So then we came up with 18 Puranas. And later, of course, the Puranas were distilled again into Tantras, which included law. They included customs, traditions. The Tantras again were distilled into the epics. So you have the Mahabharata, you have Ramayana, where you have the philosophy told in the context of a story. Bhishma is shot full of arrows on the battlefield and he stops the war for 6 months because the sun just crossed into the southern hemisphere. And for 6 months he laid on a bed of arrows and described all the customs, traditions, philosophy, all of Vedanta. And he explained all the principles of Hindu philosophy to both sides of the armies. And then when the sun came back into the northern hemisphere, he said, okay, well, now my time has come to go. Start the war. And he left his body. So this is how, again and again, yada yada ki dharma shap, again and again, every time the dharma needed to be updated and revitalized, God sent some messengers to come and collect all the old literature and put it into a new, with a new cover. Put a new cover on it and translate it and interpret it into relevant information for the people of that society, of that time, place, and circumstance, so we can use it. So it's not just stagnant knowledge that's in books, but it becomes something for us by which we can guide our lives. And that's how the literature evolved, and that's how it continues to evolve. When I go to a temple in India and sit and tell stories or chant, many ladies will come from the village and say, Vyasji, you remember. Vyas is a living tradition. Anybody who expounds on the Vedic knowledge is called Vyas as a title of respect, as in Veda Vyas. Right. Actually, Vyas means the expounder of 1,000 verses. Just like Indra, who has performed 1,000 yajnas, Vyas, who has written 1,000 verses. So if you sit in the temple and expound the scriptures, you become Vyas, the embodiment of the expression of 1,000 verses. Anyone who communicates that knowledge. Veda Vyas is not one individual. He is a living tradition. And so the rishis are not confined or relegated to history books, but they are living traditions. Whoever follows this knowledge, whoever practices this knowledge, becomes a rishi. Chandi patang divaratrao kriya deva nashangshaya. Without a doubt. If you sing the chandi in the day and in the night, you become a god or a goddess. Without a doubt. These are training manuals, how to put ourselves into the bhava, the attitude, that intensity of reality that our predecessors experienced. They said, we found something so wonderful, we're going to tell you how we got there. If you do the same practice we did, you're going to get the same fruit we did. Without a doubt. So that's how the Chandi Path comes to us. As a manual, a practical instruction. How do we put our body, our breath, our mind into a harmony so we can surrender the attachments of egotism and intuit the presence of the goddess within us? That's what it's about. We are not studying this as historians. We are not studying this as grammarians. We are not studying this as anthropologists. We are studying from the point of view of sadhus. Sadhu means efficient. Someone who is so efficient at organizing our lives that we don't have to go out there anymore. Our minds stay here. We attain a degree of efficiency which is exemplified through focus, through our attentiveness. When we don't pay attention, we make mistakes. We're inefficient. We misuse resources. Conversely, when we do pay attention, we are free from error. We get the work done all the quicker, and we can go back to the joy of singing to God. Om Sang Saraswati Namah. So now on the table of contents, let's just look at it for a few moments. The seven verses that express the essence of She Who Relieves All Difficulties. The song containing 108 names of the respected reliever of difficulties. The removal of the curses by Brahma and others. These mantras were so powerful that they attached a curse to these mantras. And the curses are very, very powerful and very, very beautiful curse. It says, if you abuse your tools, they won't work for you. Pretty common sense. Except how many of us forget it so often. The Chandipat is a tool for personal development. It is a method by which we can surrender the attachments of egotism and free ourselves from the rampant roaming mind. And if we start using this Chandipat as a tool for earning our livelihood, a tool for attaining status, I will chant the Chandi and you won't receive the fruit of your karma. You pay me some money and I'll give you the blessings of the goddess. If we try to put ourselves in that position, then we're not using the tool for its intended purpose. Its purpose is not to make a livelihood for a priestly caste. Its purpose is to create a system of surrender so we can be in the moment and perceive without any obstruction what really is. We get to perceive the natural reality rather than only looking at our conceptions, our desires, looking at the world through the purview of our desires. We see the reality. That's the curse. The armor of the goddess, she gives us a suit of armor. She unfastens the bolt. She removes the pin, like a deadbolt latch or a security latch. Praise to the knight of duality. And the tantric praise to the knight of duality, the highest meaning of the goddess. The system of worship with the nine-lettered mantra, and now we begin the text. That's the introduction. The chapter one, the subject of chapter one, is the balance of too much and too little. Too much and too little are always causing us to act and interact on the stage of life. We say, I don't have enough. I need a job to get some money. And I need an education to get the job. And I need a car to get the education. And I need a book. And I need, and I need, and I need. Too little. Then we get all the stuff. We got so much stuff. I need to get rid of stuff. Too much and too little keep us constantly off balance. And the goddess comes and shows us just how much we need. That's chapter one. Chapter two, slaying the armies of the great ego. The great ego sends his armies, anger, passion, blindness, anxiety, the great frustration, memories. All come to attack the worshiper. Chapter three, the slaying of the great ego. Chapter four, the gods praise the goddess. Chapter five, the ambassador of self-conceit. And chapter six, the slaying of sinful eyes. Chapter seven, the slaying of passion and anger, the slaying of the seed of desire, the slaying of self-deprecation, who is never good enough. He blew it again. He made that same mistake. If only I hadn't. And in chapter 10, the slaying of self-conceit, who just can't stop patting himself on the back. The God's song of praise, the fruits of reciting the Chandi, and the granting of boons. This is the subject matter of the main text. How do we get the boons? If we perform the same sadhana, that samadhi, the businessman, and sirat, the king, then she will come to us as she came to him. The system of worship with the nine-lettered mantra, again, the Vedic praise of the goddess, the tantric praise of the goddess, the most preeminent secret, the modified secret, the secret of the manifestations, a prayer for forgiveness every time we blew it. That's our errors and omissions clause. The rosary of 32 names of Durga, a song seeking forgiveness from the goddess for the commission of offenses, the song that gives the key to perfection, be victorious, Jai Chandi, Jai Jai, Devi Moyi, the manifestation of the goddess, a song of praise to the supreme goddess, and bowing down with devotion. And that's the subjects that we will cover in the study of this book. Let's move on to page 34 in the new edition. I don't know what page it is in the old books. Sapta Shloki Durga, the seven verses that express the essence of she who relieves all difficulties. These are seven verses from the Chandi, which really communicate the most bhava. What she is, who she is, why are we doing this? Where are we going with this? Om Sang Sarasvati Namaha. On page 34, seven verses that express the essence of she who relieves all difficulties. The consciousness of infinite goodness, Shiva said. O goddess, you are accessible to your devotees as you give the effects of all actions. Please tell me the means of success in perfecting all desires in this age of darkness. And the goddess said, listen, O divine being, as I elucidate the highest path spiritual discipline. Because of your unswerving love for me, I reveal the song of praise of the goddess. Om, presenting the mantras of the Song of Seven Verses, explaining the respected reliever of difficulties. The all-pervading consciousness is the seer. Anushtup is the meter, 32 syllables to the verse. The respected remover of darkness, the great goddess of true wealth, and the great goddess of all-pervading knowledge are the deities. Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati, for the satisfaction of the reliever of difficulties, these seven verses of Durga are applied in recitation. Now, note, all mantras have a seer, Rishi, who originally realized this knowledge and passed it along to us. A meter, a certain number of syllables with which it is expressed. A deity whose attributes or actions are being extolled, a seed or essential nature, a specific energy, and one or more specific principles that are incorporated into the purpose of recitation. Such a statement is called biniyoga. It's the application and is preparatory to the mantras indicated. So we have several vinyogas within the Chandipat. We have one sankalpa, which is our vow of worship to complete this Chandipat, the entire recitation. Within that sankalpa, we have several vinyogas, which are specific applications for specific functions. Each of them has their own rishi, their own chando, their own deity. So we're going to find this biniyoga, this application of these mantras coming again and again throughout the various texts that we study. She, this supreme goddess, The great measurement of consciousness attracts the perceiving capacity of all sensible beings with such force as to thrust them into the ignorance of egotistic attachment. Now, this Maha Maya, Ma means to measure, and Maya is the measurement of all that is. And Maha means the great. So this great measurement, she's measuring by putting limitations, defining a form. And as soon as you have a form, you have something in front of it and something behind it. You have something to the right of it, something to the left of it. You have a relationship in time and space. And that's how she's limiting all of existence, Maha Maya, the great limitation of consciousness. Because without that form, we would just perceive infinitely. There would be no limitation, no boundary. So she is attracting the perceiving capacity, all the consciousness of all sensible beings with such force as to say, if there's a form out there, then there must be something here. Tvam aham. So aham. If there's something different, then I must be separate because I am witnessing that difference from this position. So in this way, she thrusts everyone into the ignorance of egotistical attachment, because if there's a you, there's gotta be a me. O reliever of difficulties, remembering you, the fear of all living beings is dispelled. When remembered by those individuals in the harmony of spiritual growth, you increase their welfare and intelligence. Who is like you, O dispeller of poverty, pain, and fear, whose sympathetic demeanor always extends compassionate assistance to everyone? Exposer of consciousness, we bow to you. So here she is so compassionate and sympathetic, and she's so serviceful, and she's helping out any devotee who calls upon her, especially those devotees who live in the harmony of spiritual growth. She is always there to dispel poverty, pain, and fear. To the auspicious of all auspiciousness, to the good, to the accomplisher of all objectives, to the source of refuge, to the mother of the three worlds, to the goddess who is rays of light, exposer of consciousness, we bow down to you. She exposes the consciousness. She makes the containers of consciousness so that we can see that consciousness is. Because were consciousness not contained, how would we be aware of it? How could we see it? We can only see it because of the container. So here she is exposing the consciousness through her containers. To the intrinsic nature of all. Oh, those who are devoted to you and take refuge in you, even though lowly and humble, you save them from all discomfort and unhappiness. All worry you take away, O goddess, exposer of consciousness, we bow to you. The intrinsic nature of all, the supreme of all, the energy of all as well, you remove all fear from us, O goddess, reliever of afflictions, O goddess, we bow to you. When you are pleased, you destroy all infirmities, and when you are displeased, you frustrate all desires. No calamity or disease befalls those who take refuge in you, and those who take refuge in you invariably become a refuge to others. Be careful. Whoever takes refuge in the mother invariably becomes a refuge to others. Better plan on expanding your living rooms. O Spirit of the Supreme Sovereign, terminate all disturbance in the three worlds and in like manner remove from us all hostility. Om. Remember, there are 36 principles in Tantra. Let's start at the highest, and we'll work our way down into manifestation. The highest is Sada Siva, he who is total infinite consciousness, unmanifest. And Shakti, she who is totally infinite energy. Both of them are unmanifest. You can't even begin to comprehend the infinite. Together, they make Ishwar, often called Ardhanarishwar, half man Ishwar, or Ardhanari Ishwar, half a woman Ishwar. That means the union between consciousness and nature. Now, after Ishwar comes Shuddhvidya. You've seen the picture of Shiva just barely opening his eyes. And he's saying, with his barely opened eyes, I think there may be something out there. And the fifth principle is Maya. He opens the eyes. Yes, there is definitely something other than me. And in that Maya, the aham-tvam relationship is solidified. Then come five kanchuk. Panch kanchuk is limitations of perception, modes of perception. Kal, nyati, raga, vidya, and kala. Time, space, attribute, knowledge, and activity. Relationship. Activity in relationship. That is that every atom is moving in the vortex of space. It is attracted to some other atom. So that creates vibration. Protons, neutrons, electrons, quarks, all spinning about the nucleus of an atom. This atomic movement, activity. These are five modes of perception. They're not things in themselves, as Kant was going to talk about. The distinction between a priori knowledge and intellectual knowledge. So here we have five limitations of that consciousness which gives birth to Purush and Prakriti. Qualified consciousness, which is an individual soul perceiving in the universe other individuals. He is perceiving the Prakriti. There is a distinction. Now we have entered into Shankhya philosophy. The unity has separated. And Purush and Prakriti are completely distinguished. So from the point of view of Ishwara, from the point of view of Sadashiva or from Shakti, there is only unity. But from the point of view of Purush and Prakriti, there is all of this diversity. Now, our job is to move from the diversity to the unity in diversity, and then to the unity. We move from Shankhya philosophy, where we perceive in duality, to yoga philosophy, where we create a harmony, to Vedanta philosophy, where there's only one. That's what Chandi will do for us. She will take us along this journey. That's how she works. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha.